Hello, I'm Stephanie Belcher.
And I'm Del Belcher, and this is
Two Peas in a Podcast, a relationship show from two people who like each other
very,
very
much.
Aww. How are you, Delbert?
Stephanie, I am recovering. Here's something that happens. When you become 30 years old, you cannot party like the young ones do.
Oh, I thought you were going to say wake up without pain.
Well, that too. I feel like that's one and the same. Because when you are 29 and younger, you can go hard. You can go all night. You can do all-nighters for studying for college. You can do all-nighters for work. You can do all-nighters for partying or just hanging out with friends or playing video games and eating Cheetos. But the second that you turn 30 years old, that's not possible anymore. Now I'm a 34-year-old man. The emphasis on the old man. And I'm doing okay. I'm hanging in there. Because last night, we had a good time.
We did. I didn't realize it was so rough on you.
It's because I'm an old man.
So we had some people over. We do bad movie night with friends. So we watched Dick Tracy, which was one of my favorite movies growing up as a kid. But it was on all of these terrible movie lists.
We were all convinced that it was a terrible movie.
We thought it was
good. Everyone was. And you were like, no, I'm going to pick this movie. It's a good movie. You were really excited.
I remember liking it as a kid. And so when I saw that it was on bad movie lists, I was shocked. However, I have been wrong or foiled before. Hudson Hawk. Not a good movie.
That is a legitimately bad movie.
It's real bad.
It's not even like enjoyable bad.
No, it's the first 10-15 minutes I think are fun, and then after that there's nothing.
I do like the scene where him and the other guy are singing while they're trying to rob Bruce Willis, and the other guy are trying to rob a bank, and they do this thing where they sing the song because it's like times out how long they have. I don't know why they have this or where it came from. And that's there's no explanation. Fun. It's cute, it's fun, but other than that it's just a bananas movie.
But Dick Tracy, though. So we did that, and then we had Coney Dogs.
Yeah, we did. You brought the gluten-free buns.
Yep.
And then we had the Kogels, because you can't have Coney's without Kogels.
I had never had one of those before. Delicious brand of hot dogs.
We had Flint-style chili, which, great. For those of you not from Michigan, a Coney Dog is basically a chili on a hot dog. And Michigan, the Coney Dog is very different in the Midwest between where you go. And even in Michigan, there's different styles. There's Detroit style, Jackson style, Flint style. Those are the kind of the main ones. And the Jackson style is a little more saucy because I felt like the Flint style was not as wet saucy, but it was very good.
Not add as much water as the recipe called because I wanted it a little bit thicker.
Oh, well, there you look at then.
And it was really good.
Then we have Stephanie style. You have disrupted the Coney game.
It's true. I did.
You did. We had the onions, they had the mustard. It was
amazing.
Delectable.
And then someone brought Jaeger bombs.
Yeah, and like I think I'm doing okay. I'm not, but I feel like until I became 30 years old, I had not experienced a 2-day hangover, and you get those now when you're 30.
I'm sorry that you don't feel good. I feel fine.
I feel okay, but not as good as I would have if I was a younger man.
Okay,
you know what I'm saying.
So this is Two Peas and a Podcast. It's a relationship show from two people that like each other very, very much. The second part of our show is The Split, where we take a relationship article torn from the headlines and talk about it. We're on a 3-part series talking about ways to feed babies. The first round we did human donor milk. Then last time we did formula. This time we're going to be talking about breast milk, which I guess could have been with the first one, but whatever.
I can see why they're different.
Yes.
Because you're getting, it's not like your own breast milk. It's like someone else's breast milk.
However, anyway. But this was really fun to research, and I learned a lot of interesting things.
From what I've heard on the internet, breast milk is magical.
Pretty much.
It's the golden elixir of the gods.
It's true.
So I'm excited to hear your research, because the last year I've experienced you breastfeeding our daughter, and I've known that it's been really interesting, very interesting. So I'm excited to hear your side of things. And for my part, we're changing it up a little bit. If you're a fan of the past, a new segment that we're doing on the show called Better Half, where we take someone from famous history, current events, popular culture, and we talk about their partner. Because behind every great person is a great partner. But the thing about partners is that they are also very much their own person. And so we are going to be kicking that off right here.
Well, you said right here, Del, so I want to know what this week's better half is.
Okay, well, here you go.
Who this week's better, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. This is a good one. This is a good one. It's a local boy.
Ooh.
We talked about Michigan. He's probably experienced various Michigan conies before. But David Michael Burka was born in May.
I have no clue who David Michael Burka is.
Good. I gotcha.
I'm interested. I'm intrigued.
He was born May 20.
Burka's a name around here.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
I don't think they're related, but
yeah.
You never know. David Michael Burka was born May 29th, 1975 in Dearborn, Michigan. Just outside of Detroit. He's the son of Deborah Zajas and Daniel Burka. He grew up in Canton, Michigan with his parents and his older sister. Fun fact about Canton.
Pretty close from here.
Canton is where our closest IKEA is.
Oh, love.
And Home Goods.
I love IKEA for the first 30 minutes, like everyone.
Was it, so I think someone did a prank where they put their own arrows down in IKEA and led everyone around like a maze that never ended.
Isn't that just IKEA?
So he knows the IKEA. He's okay. Been there, and I've been to Canton a few times outside of IKEA. He went to Salem High School. He graduated there in 1983. And he's one of those artistic fellas. He trained acting at Interlochen Center for the Arts, which is here in Michigan.
Oh, I feel like I know
school.
Who this is.
Nora Jones went there. A bunch of people went there. It's a big, like, huge music arts camp. Bachelor of Fine Arts from University of Michigan. And further training at the William Esper Studios. So Burka, he decides, I'm going to be an actor. So he's going out doing the acting thing. He makes his television debut in 2002 as the guest spot on your favorite show, The West Wing.
Yeah.
A show about walking and talking. It was followed by an appearance on Crossing Jordan, which I've never watched Crossing Jordan, but I've only heard good things about
it. I feel like I heard it was good too, but I can't tell you what it's about.
I like the name.
Something
because
with a Jordan.
There's
a
like
person.
The name is like, there's like this biblical, like crossing the Jordan River, but they're also like, don't cross Jordan.
Yeah.
Watch out. Jordan's going to get you if you cross him.
So David was in this show.
He was in the show, a couple of guest spots. He then made his Broadway debut in 2003 with a revival of Gypsy, which starred Bernadette Peters. So he is moving his way up. So David spent a lot of time in various musicals in the early 2000s, winning awards, living the stage actor's life. He continued his TV career, and he got a spot in 2006 on a little show called How I Met Your Mother, where he appeared in 7 episodes over the span of the series.
There were a lot. That show went on for a long time. There were a lot of I remember when Britney Spears was in that. Not because I actually watched it. I just remember it was like her comeback thing.
It was like a Friends level. People were into it. It
was
on for a very long time.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah. So he was in 7 episodes throughout the run of the show. His character, his name was Scooter. Which is
great.
A great name, which was a former high school boyfriend of the character Lily. She wasn't over him, but he was way past it, and she was really into
She's with Marshall anyway. So.
I know. So his stint on How I Met Your Mother, though, did bring in some controversy.
Ooh.
So the controversy was 6 months after Burka's first How I Met Your Mother appearance, allegations arose that the actor had only received the part because of a romantic relationship with one of the show's stars.
Yes. Actor. I know who it is.
Neil Patrick Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris! I thought so. Yes.
Yes. So, this is interesting. Speculation around this story eventually led Harris to acknowledge publicly that he himself was gay. So, up until this point...
I know. I remember.
He hadn't been out yet.
Doogie Howser was just... Sorry, I can't let go of Neil Patrick Harris being Doogie Howser ever. I grew up with that show.
And I guess it's been so much of my adult life that Neil Patrick Harris has just been him.
He's so dang talented.
To think
talented.
Of that time before he was out and that was a public thing is just,
I know,
was
it's
just
weird.
To think about.
I know they're like two totally different people, but it's kind of like Ellen to me. Mm-hmm. Like I've just always thought of Ellen as this.
Just Ellen.
Yeah.
But so that was the kind of the tipping point where he was like, yeah, we are together.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't why he got the part, but like we are together and we've actually been in a relationship since 2004. So they'd been in a relationship for a very long time. So Burtka and Harris kind of made things public by attending the Emmy Awards in 07 as an openly acknowledged couple for the first time.
I mean, this was before, like, I feel like now if you're gay, it's not really a big deal. But I remember going through the time span where it was a huge deal. And coming out, I mean, coming out is still a really big deal to a lot of people in the community. Mm-hmm. I'm not a part of the community, so I don't want to pretend to know. But I feel like now the weight of it is very different than it was.
Well, to think that Neil Patrick Harris had been part of the show for so long.
Yeah.
And it was just not known.
Yeah.
You know, that's 10 years ago, almost 12 years ago.
You know what I thought when he came out? Hmm. Cool. And then I went on with my day.
I was like, okay, cool. Whatever.
Yeah. Awesome. It's great.
Yeah.
So, but that being said, it was probably a really big deal for him.
It was. So soon after that, David made a pretty big life change, not only being in a public relationship with a very famous actor person, but Burtka quit acting as his full-time job to become a personal chef.
Ooh.
Which is, I think,
great. If you ever want to quit your full-time job to become a personal chef.
Honestly, I have thought about it. he graduated from Le Cordon Bleu.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Which I only think of chicken cordon bleus, which are those chickens with cheese in them or whatever.
And ham.
And ham. Mm. Which I don't think that's what the school is named after. But I would hope.
I think it is.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe it's real hard to make one of those. We've made them before. Anyway.
Anyway. So he graduated. Part of the from Pasadena, and then he graduated from the program in the summer of 2009. Afterwards, he began running a Los Angeles catering company, with Molly Hennessy, who he had graduated with, called Gourmet MD. So they do catering and fancy parties and stuff. So Burtka did continue to act along with some Broadway and TV, but not full time.
How super talented!
I know, and so he. Along with Cordon Bleu, he trained under now canceled Mario Batali. At his restaurant in New York called Babo. And then he did some with Gina De Palma, who is another chef and author.
I don't know if I know who Gina De Palma is. Anyway, but you just said.
So there's that. So he's been doing that for a while. And then he did graduate from the University of Michigan.
Woo-hoo! So
one of the things that they do, even though they live in LA currently, is that they have donated quite a collection of really cool art to the University of Michigan Museum of Art.
That's awesome.
So if you go
there. We've been there.
Yeah. And
it's nice. It's got a nice little thing going on.
You see like his name. And you're just like, oh, cool. And then you see Neil Patrick Harris's name next to it or under it. And it's very cool. David's passion for acting and food and entertainment and, you know, his family has made him really well suited for the world of cooking television. He's hosted two shows on the Cooking Channel. Along with
that's awesome.
He's been a guest judge, too, on Iron Chef America.
We need to watch that episode.
Beat Bobby Flay. And a couple other things. So one of his shows is called Celebrity Dish, where he went to like restaurants owned by celebrities, kind of saw what they were up to. And then
he's like the perfect person to do all that because he's got acting experience and a cook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of the like Bobby Flay types, they went from the cooking to the acting world to have this other crossover the other way.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. He also had a show called Life is a Party with David Burtka, where he would basically...
David Burtka?
That's his name. David
Burtka. You said so-and-so had a show with David.
No, that was the name of the show.
Oh, okay.
His show was called Life is a Party with David Burtka.
Oh, okay.
Because he's all about making these...
Oh, it took me a minute.
Fun party atmospheres. You said it, that a dinner without a theme, or a party without a theme...
A party without a theme is just dinner.
And that's basically his take on things. So he would do how you do family dinner, how you do, like... make really cool parties out of everything. So he's big on that. And you would know that he's into partying if you've ever seen the family Halloween costume pictures that they do every year with their two kids. They have twins.
That's what I thought. I thought that they had kids.
Gideon and Harper. But so his goal really with food is to have create like this tempting homemade farm to table, very sustainable food and, you know, have these parties where people not only have food that looks good, but also tastes good and comes from a sustainable place. So he's a really big advocate for that.
That's cool.
So following the passage of the Marriage Equality Act in New York on June 24th in 2011, where they were living, him and Neil Patrick Harris got married they have their two twins, and he continues to just kind of crush it on the food scene in LA now. So he's doing really well.
That's awesome.
And that's the better half, David Burka.
I think what I'm interested in this one is the other ones we've done, I feel like the people are a little bit older. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing he's 40s or something.
He graduated high school. Oh, he was born 1975. So, oh, yeah, okay. 44.
So I think it's cool to see. I'll be interested in seeing what he does next.
Yeah, the other the other people have kind of had like a legacy.
Yeah, I mean, Melinda Gates is still probably going to do a lot. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested to see what he'll do next because he's got a lot of time left to do cool things.
A lot of time left. So who knows? But if we're ever in LA, we got to go to one of his parties. I want to find out where he goes. Because Food MD sounds very fun. And their logo is like that snake staff doctor logo, except that it's like a spoons and knives.
Oh, that's cute.
So it's very cute.
I love it.
But entertainer. And I really like his philosophy with food and parties and themes and things. And, you know, you do that really well, too. So.
It's true, though. Dinner is fun, but dinner with a theme is a party, and it's way more fun.
I'm really good at the theme for dinner. The theme is food. Just eating food.
It's not a theme.
Well, I said food, so you know what that means.
I do know what that means. Bloop, bloop, bloop. The Split, where we take a relationship article torn from the headlines and talk about it.
We're going to talk about the magic elixir, the nectar of Zeus himself.
The booby juice. And I feel like I put this disclaimer on all of these, but I want to do it again just to be sensitive. So we don't have any judgment about how you feed your kids. So we just think fed is best. But we think that this is really interesting stuff, and we hope that you find it as interesting as we do.
Healthy and nutritious.
Always delicious.
Always delicious.
Actually, I don't know if it's always delicious. Breast milk. I think it might be. So we're going to talk about...
Have you ever tasted it?
No. Maybe inadvertently, because like Carly spit up in my mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's probably not the best expression of breast milk.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to define some terms up front. I'm going to try to be sensitive to breastfeeding because people have a lot of feelings about it. But I'm going to say breastfeeding is when you're feeding milk that is expressed or nursed or comes from a breast. And then breast milk is milk from a breast. And then nursing is babies eating from the breast.
Okay.
And I make that differentiation because a lot of women pump and feed that to their baby, and that's breastfeeding for sure. Mm-hmm. But then some people only nurse, some people do both, some people blah, 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 blah. So I'm trying to be sensitive here.
Oh,
but like,
that makes sense to me because I didn't totally get that either. Nursing, breastfeeding, what's the difference?
Yeah.
And you just told me what the difference was.
Well, the thing is, I think there's a lot of judgment behind those words. If I like mess up a little bit, like, please forgive me. I'm trying to be sensitive, okay, but good. You know,
I won't cancel.
But
you.
I'm only human.
It's true.
So you may or may not know this, but throughout history, there's a lot of commentary on breastfeeding.
I don't feel throughout history that I've seen much evidence of people talking about how women should do things.
Yeah, it's weird, huh?
It's weird.
So what's interesting about breast milk is compared to other bodily fluids, it really, other than poop.
You can eat it.
Well,
it's like how many other bodily fluids are just like super edible?
Well, people don't get as jazzed about pee, sweat, or tears. This is from a research article I found. It is true. It's interesting.
You can't eat tears unless they're from your enemies.
It's true. Then you drink those for breakfast. Then you drink
them for breakfast. Yeah.
However, but over time, there's been a lot of different meanings and feelings around breast milk. In classic Greece, Hera's milk made Hercules invincible.
I wish. Ooh, my milk.
It's like one letter away.
This is invisible milk. Ooh.
And then we know from Game of Thrones last week
that breast milk from a giant makes you very strong.
It's true. And then we also know that in the Bible, Mary didn't have sex. However, we know from lots of different sources and you'll see in a lot of classic art depictions, that she still got to nurse Jesus.
Hmm.
So you can go to, you know, there's probably
Did he
every...
become invisible?
Invincible? Invisible? Anyway. So she still got to do that.
Mm-hmm.
In ancient Egypt, wet nurses, which are women that would nurse your baby, they were still considered servants. However, they got better treatment than other servants.
I would think so. Hey, you're feeding my child with your body. I'll treat you a little bit better.
There's an interesting thing there because it's still someone who's a servant.
Yeah.
However, I guess you're getting treated better. So I have this weird, I'm like, oh, you're getting treated better. But, yeah.
Go me.
And so throughout history, there's really never been a time where nursing and breastfeeding has been without judgment, or what I call isms, like classism, racism, inequality. Hundreds in Europe. There was a period of time where elites or people that had a lot of money would send their babies to wet nurses. And then it was interesting because there was also a period of time when then there became elite wet nurses. And what they would do is if they had a few clients, they would ship the not as wealthy babies to like the some other
like,
wet nurses.
I'm subletting my baby.
Yes.
I'm subletting your boobs to someone else. Yeah.
And then they'd keep the good milk for their well-paying clients.
Okay. So I'm giving you my baby. And since I'm not as cool as the other people, you're secretly giving my baby to someone else to feed.
Yes. It's interesting, though, because there's also wet nurses definitely would keep some babies alive for other women that couldn't nurse. So I don't want to paint this picture of all wet nursing being bad, because that's not true. Hey, however, I think it's interesting.
Just living that hustle lifestyle, man. You got to do what you got to do.
So wet nurses were around for centuries, still around. But there's different reasons why people went and used wet nurses. One of them we talked about, if you couldn't nurse yourself, you could find another woman that might be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Another was that men wanted to keep their wives to themselves and in particular control their breasts.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be wealthier men that had some serious control issues.
Those are for me, not for you, baby.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then when you are breastfeeding, some women... don't get pregnant. Some do. I don't know the statistics behind that. So if you're thinking of getting pregnant, you're breastfeeding, go talk to your doctor. Don't listen to this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
However, they kind of figured out that when you were breastfeeding, you are less likely to get pregnant. And so a lot of men wanted more children.
To work the farm.
Well,
or whatnot.
To inherit property. There's a lot of different reasons because Europe has some interesting property laws, have more kids anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they would, wealthier people would have their wives give the baby to a wet nurse so that way women can have more children more quickly.
Ooh. Wow. Like right off the bat, we're like, how can we leverage these natural things to make money?
Yeah. So there's really a history of like using women to create more children anyway.
Weird.
I have a note here that says, so some men suck.
Hashtag so some men suck.
Some men.
Yeah.
In the late 1790s, French women. Oh, and then we start getting into how can we put regulations around this.
Oh, brother.
Great. So in the 1790s, French women who were in need could not get welfare if they did not breastfeed their children.
Okay.
And then, I have France here, but I think it's actually Germany. In Germany, they then made it illegal not to nurse your baby.
Illegal?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you moderate that. And it's super unfair. Well, and
the Germans are very efficient. I'm sure they figured something out.
So that's a very long history of breastfeeding. We covered, 2,000 years in 5 minutes. So we missed some things. But that brings us to today. And today, the World Health Organization and the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends breastfeeding for women for babies. So using breast milk to feed your baby,
mm-hmm.
at least until your baby is 6 months.
Okay.
That's the general recommendation. Okay. Hopefully, they're not adding any laws around it.
Ooh, yeah. Or else. Whenever like a recommendation ends in, or else. You gotta always gotta start worrying.
We'll be very upset.
It's like, what is it that they disapprove of that? Like, who are they?
You know.
They?
So now we get to, how does breastfeeding work?
Yeah, you go, you hook it up to the boob, and you just start chugging away.
So I'm going to go back a little bit, and I do not have a degree in bodies. Biology. But when women are pregnant, your body is building up progesterone, and then your progesterone ebbs and flows, and that helps with breast milk production.
Okay.
And so breasts themselves have glandular tissue called alveoli. I'm probably saying that wrong. Could be a pasta, also a breast tissue.
Alveoli.
Alveoli. That's what's for dinner. Alveoli. So this glandular tissue is a smooth muscle-like tissue, and it's around each tiny milk-producing cell. And the way it works is they contract when different hormones are released. So it's this like little tiny muscle in your boob, and it contracts.
Okay.
Muscle-like thing.
Yeah, it does muscly things.
That makes sense.
Yeah, muscles contract. Yeah.
So a letdown is what occurs when you're breastfeeding, one of the things that occurs. And it occurs when there's a contraction in that little thing, and it propels milk down through a milk duct to an opening in the nipple.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're releasing milk through pumping or feeding, or maybe there's another method, manual expression, there are several letdowns that occur. Mm-hmm. And that's that contraction in that muscle expressing or getting milk out.
And that's the letdown.
Yes.
Okay.
And so milk coming out and how much you produce is based off of supply and demand generally. So
how does your body know that?
I know. Isn't it amazing?
You say it's like, oh, supply and demand. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then it's like, oh, these are just some glands in my body that just know that.
I don't totally know how it works, but the more you demand through some method, through sucking, through pumping, whatever, the more supply you will have.
Wow.
You know, if you keep your diet up or whatever.
Okay.
And so some of the ways that you can have an increase in demand are babies crying. That'll trigger that. Suction, massage, etc. That is the most basic science in the world between.
That's.
But it's interesting.
It's very interesting, and I didn't know that. So yeah. To me, it's the most beautiful thing that's ever been made.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Feeding babies.
Made Hercules invisible. So speaking of how milk production works, do you know what breast milk is composed of?
Nutrients and bodily secretion.
Ugh, isn't the word secrete awful?
Secretion is a bad word.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do not know. All I know is that it does. I do not know how.
So it's 87% water.
Oh, okay.
It makes sense, right? Yeah. 7% lactose, 4% fat, and 1% protein. And then also within all that goodness is water, protein, carbs, antibodies, fats, vitamins, and minerals, bacteria, other immune cells, and some hormones.
So it's got everything that your body, your baby body crave.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is, you know, that's the general composition of milk. However, when you analyze milk from each mom, they're all a little bit different because the milk that's produced differs for each baby.
So this is where it starts getting wild to me because first of all, you got this breast milk. It's got all this stuff in it, and it's all, that's all like baseline. Every breast milk producing person can make a similar thing, which is in itself.
Yeah, they're all similar.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But then based on your baby situation, it can sort of just, it's like, I'm just changing.
Yes.
That's nuts.
There's another layer to that. So breast milk also changes in two other ways.
Mm-hmm.
First, the composition, like the quality of breast milk changes as a baby develops, and it also changes during a singular breastfeeding or expression time.
How does that happen?
So let's talk about a feeding or a pumping session.
Mm-hmm.
When that's occurring, there's two types of milk that come out. There's the first milk that comes out, which is called formilk, and it's a little bit thinner, mm-hmm. and it kind of like quenches the baby's thirst. Mm-hmm. So baby's thirsty. Ah, yeah.
Like a nice Sprite.
Yeah. So your formilk comes out first, and then after that is hind milk, which comes out next.
Not very creative names.
No. Well, whatever. And the difference between that and formilk is hind milk has a higher fat content to it.
Okay. Yeah. I get it. It's like that chaser that really fills you up.
Yes.
Never lets you down.
So the formilk is an amuse-bouche. Mm-hmm. And then the hind milk is the appetizer.
Oh, got it. The real deal is the hind milk.
So that's in a single feeding or a single expression time. But as the baby develops, mm-hmm. breast milk also changes the composition of it. And so close to the end of a pregnancy, a mom's body starts developing colostrum. Mm-hmm. And colostrum is mom's first milk, mm-hmm. and it's a honey-like, really thick fluid.
That's that sweet stuff right there.
And so the first few times you feed a baby, this colostrum it's not a lot. Like the, mm-hmm. it's a few milliliter. I don't know what
it's
the
just
total
like real dense and super nutritious.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So it is a small amount, but it's considered liquid gold because the nutritional value of colostrum is insane. Like if you were to run it under a nutritional analyzer, it'd be like ding, 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 ding.
It wins. Colostrum wins.
And so for the first few days, your baby's alive, baby's tummy small, all they need is colostrum, so many nutrients, they're good to go.
Wow. It's beautiful and insane.
Yeah.
Magical.
And then as a baby ages, the nutritional content of the milk starts to change.
Right.
So after colostrum comes what's called transitional milk. And for about 4 weeks, the milk is creamier, and then the fat and lactose content change to make this like creamy transitional milk.
So your body knows you got this little baby, and then it's growing up, so it needs something different, and so it starts adjusting throughout its life.
And then after that 4 weeks is when you get mature milk through the remainder of the time that you choose to express milk. And so that milk is just considered more stable. And what makes that a little bit different from colostrum or the first 4 weeks of milk is mature milk is higher in protein, lactose, and then it has different vitamins and minerals in it.
But your baby's mature. It's like, you know, drinking the breast milk.
You made
milk.
It the first 4 weeks. We're good to go.
It's got a teacup for the breast milk. It's got a nice hat. It's very mature.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool, Stephanie.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Very interesting.
So that is what we have for breastfeeding. We have the history, how it works, composition, and development.
Great.
I thought it was fascinating.
That's so much very cool stuff.
Yeah.
So Stephanie, I almost called you Adele for some reason. Stephanie.
Yes.
What has all of this research led to you as a conclusion when it comes to the breastfeeding?
I think when it comes to breast milk, objectively, just like if you were to study the human eye, you would be, or an eye, I think you would be blown away and amazed at God's creation. Mm-hmm. The more I study the composition of breast milk and how it works in keeping babies alive,
it seems like as a function and as a thing, it's one of the most like technically all over the place, like wild, miraculous things.
I think I was doing the research on this. The two things I think I was amazed at by the most are just how glands work, mm-hmm. and how they work. So that way in a feeding a baby or an expression, whatever, it's just amazing to me that there's this muscle that just magically releases milk.
Well, and then I sent this to you, but this week it was on BuzzFeed. The image like of a woman's muscular structure.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is a muscular structure of a female with something that they don't usually include, which is these muscles around the nipple and the breast that looks like a flower as part of the milk production. And like, I'm like, I've never seen that before. I've even been to like the bodies exhibit, you know, science books, all this stuff. And you just don't never see these glands that are part of, or muscles that are part of that system.
And here's the thing I don't know, because I suck at biology. When I read that article, one of the critiques was, oh, that's actually not a muscle. It's blah, blah, blah. Okay. But then reading this research, they called it, I don't know. So I don't know if it is or it isn't. However, the picture,
whatever it is,
it's beautiful. I've never seen it before. Stripped down, just looking at skin off or whatever, it does look, they look like two beautiful flowers. It's so cool.
That's awesome. So with the donor milk.
Yeah.
And with formula, we did talk that there were some controversies.
Yes.
With those. Are there any? I'm guessing there's not, because I feel like people on the internet especially are very civil. Are there any breastfeeding controversies?
You know, I didn't cover that in the research too much, but I would say there's still so many.
You did a good job of just saying, like, factually, this is just what it is. I think you did a really good job with that. But I do feel that from what I've seen is that people are very passionate and that sometimes it gets a little too passionate.
I think something we talked about was I would have been maybe four, I don't know how pregnant I was, not super pregnant. And we went to get a blood draw to confirm my pregnancy with the doctor. Mm-hmm. And do you remember I was sitting there and the woman asked me, the stranger who I didn't know, took my blood and then asked if I was going to breastfeed.
4 weeks in.
Yeah.
To pregnancy. Yeah.
And I remember thinking, what's your name? Like, this is none of your business. Mm-hmm. But then she told me that I shouldn't breastfeed because breasts are meant for husbands.
She said that?
Don't you remember that?
She's
like, boobs are sexual and they're meant for your husband.
I don't remember this at all.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, dang.
She like did two strikes in one swing. That's wild.
Yeah. We didn't know each other, but... So I lead that to, I think breasts have become hyper-sexualized, and whether they are or they aren't, I mean, I'm a sociologist at heart, so I think it's all about how you want to construct imagery around breasts, but so I think because they are so sexualized, what they can be used for, which is feeding a child, becomes more controversial, because breastfeeding takes a lot of time. You have to do it a lot, especially with a little baby. So if you want to do it successfully, being able to breastfeed whenever you're in any situation is the easiest thing to do. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, I think it should just happen, because I don't feel like you should have to limit your public space because of other people's issues and how they want to view breasts.
Yeah. And that's as your husband.
That's my personal opinion.
As your husband partner watching you go through this journey of breastfeeding over the last year, it's been kind of surprising to me of how passionate and opinionated people are about how you feed your baby, specifically with breastfeeding, but not allowing for a lot of opportunity to actually do that. It's like, you have to be very privileged to be able to pump and feed your child that way all the time.
It's true.
Like, you go to the mall, where are you going to pump? Where are you going to breastfeed? You go to school, where are you going to do that? You go to work, where are you going to do it? And for it to be so, you have to, so much pressure, so much wild, like, passion, but then so little actual resource. It just seems really out of balance.
Well, and how women feel about their breasts individually, I respect, and I want people to be able to have a private space to pump if they'd prefer that, or whatever you want to do. But I'm kind of at the point where I've done it so long that I wish I could just pump wherever I'm at. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, like, I got to find a space. I'm like, can I just hook up and go? I'm so tired.
Our last trip, you did pump on the airplane.
I did.
That was pretty great.
I was just tired and like, you know, I just got a pump for my baby. Why does this have to be a big deal? Mm-hmm. I wasn't flashing everyone. I'm literally making milk for a child. Why do I have to feel like a bad person?
Mm-hmm. Well, plus your boobs.
Anyway.
The boobs, which everyone loves, but they're secret and hidden and dangerous.
Ugh.
It's very crazy. Well,
all I want to do is feed my child.
Stephanie, that was really cool.
I thought it was fun.
I feel like this is a very enlightening series of episodes.
Yeah.
And you really hit the nuts and bolts of how breast milk works, and that's really awesome.
I think it's fun.
Cool. Good job, babe.
Oh, I think the one thing I wanted to close on that we had talked about was, if you are interested in breastfeeding or pumping, again, no pressure. You do you. But if you are a woman that works, there are laws after.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, after the Affordable Health Care Act, which is also called Obamacare, passed, they put in some legislation to help with women so that way if you're interested in pumping while you work, you can do that. Hmm. So you can Google those laws to understand what they are, but the essence is if you work for an employer, you're allowed to have a reasonable amount of time to pump in the day. Hmm. And then you're supposed to have a space for pumping, which is not a bathroom, that allows you to have privacy to do that.
Cool.
There's some little parts, like if you work for a place of 50, if your employer is 50 people or less, and them giving you that space would be a really bad hardship. They have to prove that to the government.
Okay.
By and large, being able to pump is now something that is protected.
Well, that's awesome.
Oh, for the first year of life.
For the first year of life.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, well, after that, babies are on their own anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Get a job, baby. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for sharing that info with us. And thank you to you listeners for checking out Two Peas in a Podcast. We're here every Tuesday. So if you'd like to listen to all of our episodes, we're on all of the podcast platforms. And you can subscribe, share, and come back because we are here every Tuesday. If you'd like to listen to a podcast that is not as informative or educational, I'm starting a very stupid podcast with my friend Aaron. It's very dumb, and we just talk about whatever. It's called Lobotomy 101, where we dig inside each other's brains. It's very fun.
Stephanie, I'm glad that you guys are starting a podcast because you have similar brains and just like to tell stories with each other.
I feel like it's an act of mercy on our relationship to like...
on you and I, yeah, on our... Yeah. I think for Scott too.
But yeah, Aaron's been on the show before. So if you want to check that out, we are on the podcast platforms, iTunes and whatnot. And we're releasing our shows on Thursdays. So you can check that out. And I think that's it for now. Stephanie, got anything else before we go?
We hope that after listening to this podcast, you learn that you can like each other very, very much.